We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Hey, welcome in. Glad you're along for the ride. Hayes Carline is here. Lauren Brooks, Andrew Gibson. I'm Frank Frangie. Fantastic weekend for those Gator Jag combination fans. There's that. Pretty good weekend for the Noles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They are surging, you might say. A lot of things to talk about today on a Monday edition of our program. As always, our Mondays brought to you by our friends at Big Chief Tire. How you doing over there?
I am good.
Big weekend, huh?
Yeah, huge weekend of football watching.
Yeah, big weekend.
Disappointing football watching.
Wow, what a weekend it was. Look, there's all kinds of things to get to, but let's get right to it. The Jags played, I think, their worst game of the year. I think that was a worse performance to me than Houston. I think given everything, given the progress they have made, given the way it played out, I would call it their worst performance. I think Urban would tell you it was their worst performance. Houston was, there was a lot of newness. Wasn't as much newness yesterday. Just played badly. And the Gators are going to have a new coach, Dan Mullen, gone after 4 years before he finished his fourth year. A lot of things to get to. Let's do the Jaguars in this segment. We'll get to the Gators next segment, then Pat Dooley will jump in at 3:40. We'll talk about that. Boy, the Noles and Jordan Travis continue to play well. We'll certainly get to that. We'll tell you how our picks went. This team called the Chiefs is good now. They came out of nowhere. Have you heard of them, the Chiefs?
They might have something.
They're pretty good, so we'll talk about that. There may be a new Heisman leader that no one's thinking about, and I'll mention him to you as well. So certainly a guy that belongs on the ballot. So a lot of fun stuff to get to. Basketball, the Noles are in town playing hoops. The Gators play tonight in Fort Myers, so a lot of stuff to get to. I'm going to start with the Jags. I never saw that one coming. What a weird game. 20-play drive, one of the longest in history in the league. Numerous times it looked like the Jag defense was off the field and then they made a mistake. I thought the holding on Rayshon Jenkins on Kittle was ticky-tack. Maybe you could have called it, but I thought it was – I see that not called a lot of times. It was hand-fighting. That was a dagger. Then the Jags going three and out. Then the fumble by Chenault. You realize the Jags had four snaps and there were 7 minutes left in the half? Realize that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 7 minutes left in the half.
And San Francisco had 33 by that point.
Yeah, of all times to go three and out, that one wasn't ideal.
They chose not to target Dan Arnold for the entire game.
That's just what they'll be expecting us to do.
I mean, I saw some things. I thought, again, I the defense I'll defend a little bit. It's hard when you're out there the whole time, and they should have stopped them, and somehow on the first drive they made a bunch of mistakes on the first drive, and then they legitimately got a bunch of legitimate guys out of the game. Rayshon Jenkins, shame on him. He shouldn't have done that. But, I mean, when you lose your two starting cornerbacks, I mean, I'm not going to completely defend them. They lost 30-10, but I'll defend the defense a little bit. I have no more answers for the offense. I understand if you look up and your receivers just aren't good or aren't what you'd hope they would be. The Dan Arnold thing, I don't understand. James Robinson wasn't himself. And Hayes, as I look at the Jags, now I don't know where to go now. I know they're struggling. I know they're trying. I know they're – I still think it's a good group. It's a good locker room. He hasn't lost that group. The culture is good. But, boy, that was the toughest one. For me, that was the toughest one this year to watch.
I would say so, because you're deep enough into the season now where there really was no excuse for this. I mean, we documented the challenges San Francisco was going to have to get themselves ready to play. Short week, long trip, coming off a huge win over the Rams. Would they be able to, to be prepared for this game? Well, significantly more prepared for this game from an intensity standpoint, a focus standpoint, a coaching standpoint. And again, it's just, at some point, the embarrassments have to stop. It's one thing if this team is not winning. It's another thing when every third game, it feels like it's an embarrassment. And this league is not set up to be that. It's not college football where it's, Alabama versus Southwest Missouri State some Saturdays. This is a league where the games normally are going to be pretty tight. Now, I'm not expecting the Jaguars to never get blown out. I mean, the Buffalo Bills got beat by 26 at home yesterday. So we all know that it's a funny league, and if you catch a team at the wrong time, you can get embarrassed. But it happens way too frequently to the Jaguars, and has, and it is now under Urban Meyer, and it's a concern. You can't allow – I mean, frankly, they were lucky it wasn't worse, because if Garoppolo doesn't airmail a ball, the 20-play drive that was 13 minutes is a touchdown drive. But he missed it, and I think Shanahan in his frustration was like, I'm just going to get points, and probably knew that he'd be right back on that side of the field, and he was. Laviska Shenault with a fumble. I mean, Laviska Shenault is having a just terrible year. They needed him to step up. He has not. And so you immediately give the ball back after a three and out. I mean, you've got on third down, I think that's where Trevor throws deep to John Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Why would that make any sense?
The guy has been here a week.
It's third down. You need to move the chains. I mean, you just gave up a 13-minute drive. It was an avalanche of poor decisions. The coaching was unbelievably putrid, and it led to the Jaguars only running 44 plays, which was tied for the fifth fewest in franchise history. I was surprised it wasn't the record. It was a gross display of football, and to put that in front of your home fans, the diehards that are still going, God bless them. It's an utter embarrassment, and in a litany of them, but this one really stood out as being substantially, gargantuanly embarrassing.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised the Jaguars lost. I thought the 49ers were far more talented. I didn't think that the traveling on a short week was going to matter, because they came in here and they did exactly what I kind of expected, and that is they played well offensively and they took advantage of Jaguars' weaknesses. But yesterday was the first time that we saw things that show that this team is going in the wrong direction. Trevor Lawrence, for the first time, I thought, looked very visibly frustrated. And it not just with himself, with other players. Also, Logan Cook, who we jokingly say is the best player on the team, isn't out there when the Jaguars are supposed to punt the ball. So it's a microcosm that they may have been making progress, but yesterday certainly was not progress.
The Logan Cook thing, they're all embarrassed by it. Logan should be on the field. That's a lack of focus. It's hard for me to get too hard on him. He's been their best player for 2 years. You know what I mean? It's hard for me to be too hard on a guy that I think's been their best player. I think he's a really good punter. But yeah, he should have been on the field.
It just seems like a lack of focus to me.
Urban said if things don't change, you might have to make changes today. He was vague with it a little bit. Any idea what he was talking about, what he might have been implying?
I don't think he's going to put up with this for very long. Yeah, Gibby, let us hear it.
And I don't want to get too specific because it's not my position to throw anybody under the bus, but we have to play better. If not, you have to make a change.
I will say this. I studied this league for a year. It blows me away at how he had no inkling of how to hire a staff. And he's gotten it right on the defensive side of the ball with Joe Cullen. But offensively, yeah, I mean, you hate to put, I mean, I think Daryl Bevel is not playing with a lot of, he doesn't have a lot of answers. He doesn't have a lot of things where he can just say, all right, it's 3rd and 7, just throw it to Devontae or throw it to Julio. Or, I mean, he doesn't have that on the roster. He's got a running back that's good, but is clearly not 100%. He's got a rookie quarterback. So he's got a tight end that just arrived. I mean, so I get it's a very high degree of difficulty. What I think is surprising is that Urban Meyer brings no ideas, no creativity. I mean, and he's made it pretty clear that he's sort of the CEO and Daryl Bevel's in charge of the, he doesn't make it seem like he's got his hands dirty and game planning the offense. He's said from the start, well, I'm going to lean on Bev and Shoddy because these guys have done it forever. And I just am surprised at how much abdication he has had, particularly in areas that are supposed to be strengths of his. I never expected that he'd get, up to his elbows in the defense, because he's never done that. I thought special teams absolutely are going to be Urban Meyer's special teams. And so far, they've been disappointing. Once you get beyond the Agnew returns early in the season, they really haven't done much of positive, and there's been a lot of negative. And offensively, it's surprising to me that Urban Meyer is in a building as the head coach, and they cannot figure out any schematic way to make up for their talent deficiencies at all. And I'm sure he's frustrated. But look, if Urban Meyer thinks that firing Daryl Bevel is going to solve this, he's wrong, because all it's going to show is what a colossal error he made in assembling his offensive staff. And, you know, I don't think there's going to be any easy answers here. I think he's got seven tough games offensively, and then he's going to have to evaluate it. But it worries me a little bit, because it seems like Urban Meyer is ready to put this on somebody else. Urban Meyer needs to look in the mirror and fix his offense.
Yeah, I don't know that's going to happen. When Urban said changes, my assumption, the only two things he could be talking about are Trevor and Bevel. I mean, the defense, you're not making changes.
And it's not Trevor.
Yeah, and you wouldn't think you're going to bench the quarterback. You wouldn't think that.
Well, he complimented Trevor.
Yeah, so I would think, if anything, do you let Shoddy call the plays? Both have called plays at the high level. Do you change and let Shoddy call the plays? You got to change it. Would you do that?
No, I don't think that that's what he needs to. I don't think that's going to solve anything. I think all that's going to do is.
How would you solve it then?
I think Urban Meyer needs to take more of a hands-on approach and game planning it, and okay. And working with Daryl Bevel. He has leaned on those guys, I think, a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's time now for the head coach to actually – Joe Cullen's figured out defense.
Yeah, and I think what you're basing it on what he tells us in press conferences, right? Because I don't know how involved he is. I don't know. Is Urban sitting there in the game planning meetings? Is he suggesting plays? Is he suggesting script? You know what I mean? I don't know. What I do know is the point he made is change something. It's hard for us to know what to change because we don't know what they're doing. You know, other than changing something very public, like who calls the players or who plays, you know what I mean? Other than that, we don't know. We don't know how involved Urban is. You're saying get more involved. He might already be involved. And he might not. You know what I mean? Maybe he's micromanaging, needs to be less involved. Maybe he's not managing enough. To your point, needs to be more involved. We don't know that. We
just know whatever they've been doing has led to not enough points.
And that was his point today.
And if he's meddling, then it's got to be incredibly frustrating for Bevel and his staff, because Urban Meyer publicly presents this as I am sort of leaning on them.
Yeah, and I would doubt.
And so if he's meddling in it more so than what he's letting on, then I would think that it would be difficult to work for him.
Yeah, but I don't think that's who he is. I think he's been more hands-off. So we'll talk more about that. I it's hard for us to say change this, change that, because we're not in there. But the offense, you got. I would certainly want to know an answer why they didn't throw the ball to Dan Arnold, who's become their best weapon. He's their best offensive play. With James Robinson hurt, he's their best offensive player. If you got one best offensive player, you probably ought to throw him the ball. So that's certainly something. So what do the Jaguars do? We'll talk about that when we come back. Let's get to Gator football. Dan Mullen is out. What led to the demise, and who's next? That's next. Stay with us.
I have some thoughts, and obviously we evaluate our program every day, right? You're constantly looking at things. You know, there's some things, conversations Dan and I have had in that time about how we get back to, you know, where we want to be, competing at a high level and having sustained success. You know, I have some thoughts. I'm going to, you know, probably keep some of those to myself as we move forward here. But obviously we want somebody going forward who can come in here and they share our high expectations for sustained success and can do so at a place with great resources like the University of Florida.
Now back to a Big Chief Tire Monday on The Frangie Show. Big Chief Tire. Visit BigChiefService.com.
Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline, Andrew Gibson, I'm Lauren Brooks. Those were the comments of Florida Athletic Director Scott Strickland yesterday afternoon, letting it be known that the school had parted ways with head coach Dan Mullen. Frank, I think we all saw this coming the moment that Florida lost to Missouri. The question now becomes, who's next?
Well, let's start with the first part before we get to the who's next. We all said on the air he was coaching for his job. If you lose the Missouri game, you were not going to have the job next week. Now, what I thought would it happen Sunday, which we thought it would, or would he wait? Some people thought he would wait till the next week. It's the damnedest fall from grace of all time. I mean, 2 months ago they were ranked 10th, and he was regarded as one of the best coaches in the country. Poof, he's out of a job, and it was the right thing to put him out of a job. It was the right move. I don't like coaches getting fired normally, but you don't get fired because of what you did wrong and someone's mad at you, so they're punishing you. That's not why you fire someone. If you fired him because of what he did wrong, then you'd have to say, wait a minute, he did way more right. He had his 3 good years. You don't fire him because he did something wrong. You fire him because at some point, as the athletic director, you lose confidence that it can get corrected under his watch. That's why you fire a guy, because you've lost confidence that it can get corrected under his watch. That's the strangest thing. He, and I'll say this again, he did not get fired because of recruiting. Because he got, because if they're 9-2 right now, is he fired? No, he's not fired. And they did not lose to South Carolina, Kentucky, or Missouri because of recruiting. They did not lose to LSU because of recruiting, because even though LSU recruits better, half the team was hurt. He did not lose any of those 4 games because he didn't recruit good enough players. He lost those 4 games because they didn't get the offense going. His quarterback wasn't good enough to win in the SEC. Emory Jones is a 5-5 quarterback, and that's his record. And that's why. And Dan Mullen either A, couldn't teach him to be better, B, had no confidence in his backup, so he didn't go to the backup, and turnovers and lack of downfield passing is why they lost that many games, and the losing of the games is why they fired him. So, yes, he needs to recruit better. Everyone's talking about recruiting. That's 100% correct, and the new coach has to do better. But that's not why he got fired. He got fired because they lost too many games, and the narrative became so negative. I will tell you, in all my years of watching football, of all the things I've criticized coaches for doing or not doing, of all the things I've walked away thinking, what are you thinking? When they got the ball back, when Missouri missed a field goal, they had the ball. It's incomprehensible. When you have the ball with 1:04 to go at your own 30 and you need about 35 or 40 yards to try a field goal, you were in control of the game. There's nothing Missouri could do. You've got the ball. If you go to overtime, now it's back to 50-50 and you're even again. Neither team has the ball. You don't know who's going to have the ball. You know what they do? They flip a coin. There was no coin flip with one. You had the ball. I could not believe that. I don't scream at the TV very much. I drove down the road from my buddy's house screaming into the road.
I wish I'd been able to see
you that. You have the ball. You win with the ball. I tell you what, this isn't fair. We've got an advantage. I don't want the advantage. I want to go to overtime where it's 50-50 and we flip a coin. What am I missing? Well, you're afraid he was going to throw an interception. Well, then put the other guy in. Okay? They're both going to throw an interception. Okay. Well, then throw 3 50-yard balls downfield, and if one of them gets picked off, it's a punt. You got the ball. I've never seen anything like that. I of all the decisions, wow, you don't trust your quarterback enough to throw the ball, and you don't trust your backup enough to put him in the game. That quarterback, that is a microcosm of why he lost his job. Because quarterback play, which was Dan's strength, and I'm not an anti-Dan guy, and I wish Dan well wherever he goes, but quarterback play was supposed to be your thing, and at the end of the day, they lost 5 games. They didn't lose it because of Grantham. Sorry, Gator Nation that hated Third and Grantham. That's not why they lost 5 games. It's not. Yeah, they had bad. He wasn't very good against LSU. Christian Robinson's defense wasn't very good against Stanford, but that's not why they lost the 5 games. They lost 5 games because the offense never had a chance. Look at the points they scored in those losses. 7, 13, 17, 16, 17, if you don't count the points that came in after everybody got pulled. They had the ball. I've never seen a decision like that in my life. I still can't believe it.
I can't either.
Yeah, the ball.
It makes no sense. There was plenty of time. It makes absolutely no sense. And the only thing I can equate this to, and I've never seen this before, it almost reminds me of an athlete that gets the yips. Like how bad a coach he became this year. Like it's almost like a second baseman that now can't make the throw to first.
That's a good call.
Or a golfer that all of a sudden can't make a 5-foot putt. Yeah. It's like he started making mistakes on things that you just don't make mistakes on. And I mean, again, not to pick on Will Muschamp, but Will Muschamp was ultra conservative as a head coach when it came to the offensive side of the ball. There is no way that he would have done that in that situation there, just like there was no way he'd have sat on that ball to end the first half in Lexington, Kentucky.
And that was right. The first sign of how little confidence he had in his passer.
And so if you're Scott Strickland looking at this, I mean, this is a coach that is out of answers. And really, it's like he just all of a sudden is a pitcher that can't throw a strike. I mean, every decision that he has been making has been incorrect. And a lot of these aren't hard. A lot of these are layup decisions. And he still isn't converting. It's just it had to be done. It was inexplicable. And it was almost like, okay, well, we surrender and we'll hope for the best. And again, it just didn't make any sense also from the defensive side of it. Why would you play for overtime? They started the game great on defense, much better than I thought. I thought that they put up no resistance for 60 minutes and Missouri would score a ton of points. Defensively, they were good, but you could tell late in that game, Missouri was starting to figure it out.
Because the running
defense,
back was getting lathered up.
Yeah, right. Hmm. Well, exactly.
Wonder how that happened.
Imagine that.
Shocking.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Matt Hayes was the first person last season to start saying that Mullen and Strickland were kind of starting to have a little friction. And I thought, well, there's no way by this point in the season, Dan Mullen, or even then and now, Dan Mullen will be fired. There's no way. I still didn't believe it. Even after Hayes was calling for him to be fired, I still thought, no, Dan Mullen is the right guy to lead this program. And then the program literally fell apart in front of our eyes. And I did appreciate that the defense played better Saturday night, but overall, you could tell that it was broken everywhere. And if you're asking an athletic director, do you think Mullen is the one to pick up the pieces or do you think someone else is and rebuild this? You have to look somewhere else because he was the reason that it got to this point.
Imagine this, okay? I'm going to take you through a different prism. You want you're a prism guy? You like prisms? Y'all like prisms?
Love prisms.
I'm going to take you through a different prism. Number one, it's a great word.
It is.
It's not portal, but it's good. I want to take you through a different prism. Imagine you're looking through Eli Drinkwitz's eyes. You missed the field goal. You can't stand Mullen. You want to beat him so bad. Everybody knows they don't like each other. You already had your saber and your hood ready. You were going to kick the field goal, and then you were going to beat them, and you were going to break out the saber and say, "May the force be with you." You had the whole plan, and your guy misses the field goal. Right? Stay with me here.
And your guy is one of the best.
Yeah, you got the best kicker in the country. About. You got the saber already. The saber's already behind the podium. You already got the hood ready. You've been planning this for a year. And your guy misses the field goal. And there goes the saber. There goes the hood. Right? There goes all of it. There goes my whole Star Wars, I'll show you, Dan Mullen plan. Your guy misses the field goal. And you hang your head. You go, man, that was a good saber. I went it to Big Lots. I spent like $2.99. I had a plan. I had a hood. I had it all. And my guy misses the field goal. You got to be kidding me. This freaking sucks. So you go there and you hang your head. Here now, great. It's up to them now. And you watch them run it. And your eyes get bigger. And you watch them run it again. And your eyes get bigger again. You figured out that by now they can't stop your running back. And what are you thinking if you're Eli Drinkwitz? God, this can't really be happening.
Right.
I must be in a dream. He's not really trying to get to overtime when in the last quarter I'm playing way better than him.
What drugs is he on?
What's he on? You know, I mean, aren't you
arrogant?
Yeah, I mean, but can you imagine if you're Eli Drinkwitz, when that kick goes wide, you're going, you got to be kidding me. I had a plan. I had a saber. I had a hood. I had it all.
Mevis is fantastic.
And now all of a sudden he misses the kick. And you're like, you're probably not even watching. What? They're going to come down and they're going to score and they're going to throw into Copeland. He's going to make four people miss. And their kicker, who was pretty good that night, by the way, he's going to make one. And they run the ball twice. I'm astounded. So had to go quickly. We're going to bring in Pat Dooley in a few minutes. But before we get to Pat, where do you think they're headed with the coaching search or where should they be? Quickly.
I think it's Billy Napier. I think Bob Stoops deserves a call and deserves the right to want to come out of retirement if he is fired up. But my gut feeling is that probably doesn't happen. I think it's going to be Billy Napier.
I agree with Hayes. I think Billy Napier. And okay. I think he'd be the right guy to take it over.
Okay. I will tell you that LSU is down to three coaches. Napier, Matt Campbell, and Dave Aranda. One of those three guys are going to get the offer. Word is any of the three will say yes. and that's going to happen probably in a matter of days. One of those three guys is getting an offer. From everything you hear, one of those three guys is getting the offer to be the next LSU coach. Napier, who's right there in Louisiana, Dave Aranda, who was just there, and Matt Campbell, who, by the way, every AD in the country wants to hire him. Even though he's lost, had a bunch of five-loss seasons, he's the culture guy. He's the guy players love. Everybody believes when Matt Campbell gets to a real school, apologies to Iowa State fans.
I was going
to
say.
When he gets to a real program, that he will be the next big thing. That is a commonly held belief in college football, those three guys. What if Napier takes the LSU? What if Napier gets the offer and takes the job?
Then you look at it and you say that's why LSU fired Ed Orgeron when they did, and Florida should have fired Dan Mullen after the loss to South Carolina.
Well, that's fine, but after you say that, then who you want? that's great.
That's your learning lesson.
Okay, then what?
Yeah, that's when I think it becomes complicated. Okay. I don't know who I want yet.
Okay. I will tell you at 3:35 Eastern on November 22nd, the Stoops thing isn't completely dead. Let me just tell you that. The Stoops thing isn't dead. I still think it's a long shot, but trust me when I tell you it is not dead. It is not dead. Let's bring in Pat Dooley. He may know something about that. That's next. Dooley noted after this on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
May the force be with you.
I'll be honest. Probably this morning is when I made that decision that we were ready to go a different direction. I can't say it was 70% on this day and then 80% another day. Just, you know, Dan was our coach and I was fully supportive of him. But, once you get that feeling, it's time to do something different. You need to go ahead and do it. And I woke up this morning with that feeling. And so we moved ahead.
What's going on in Gainesville? Pat Dooley is taking notes. It's time for Dooley Noted.
Brought to you by
Ackerman Urology. Don't delay your screen. Visit AckermanUrology.com today.
Dooley Noted is with Pat Dooley. Patrick, how are you today, Pat? How's your day?
You're playing my third favorite group right there.
Yeah? Who's your
third? REM.
Is that who that is?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Just for you, Pat.
How about that?
So Beatles, Tom Petty, REM, that's your list?
Well,
that's my list.
It's not really his list. Can't hear his real list. Yeah. Seriously, his list is Beatles, Tom Petty, and three changes about every week. No, I've known him 40 years. I'm telling you, three changes. Is that am I lying? Is that the truth?
Too.
Is that true or not?
Fairly accurate.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, three. But REM makes the list at some point.
Aren't
like
we
it.
All a little
yeah,
like
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
So, for sure.
All right, Pat. Mullen's out. We'll get to who's in a minute. But you and I have had this talk offline. It's amazing how quickly it turned, isn't it? How he went from one of the best coaches, Florida's found their guy, to boom, poof, suddenly they have it. It's an astounding story. It really is.
You know, I've been trying to figure it all out, what happened. And I do think that there was a little bit of, and I think Andy Staples made this point the other day when he was speaking to the quarterback club here in Gainesville, that there was a little bit of fool's gold when they beat Georgia last year. And at that point, I'm sure Dan Mullen is thinking, I don't care what I got. Give me 2 stars, give me 3 stars, I'll outcoach the other guy. And you saw Kirby take that shot at him after the game this year. But he just wasn't, it wasn't getting done. The other thing that I keep going back to is I know what it's like to have an off season where your coach is in trouble and it's not good. And then you open with Utah.
Right.
We saw Utah the other night. You don't want to be opening with Utah, and so if you lose that game, it starts all over again. And I think that may have been part of the what went into Scott Strickland's decision. But, look, the guy, Strickland flew up separately from the team, and he flew up with Fred Ridley, and Fred Ridley has a little bit of influence. I'm sure that may have been a factor as well.
Yeah, for people that don't know, Fred Ridley's head of the Masters, a Gator grad. You saw them standing next to – even on the TV broadcast, you saw them standing next to each other on the sidelines. And then I was told, like you were later on, that they flew up there together. All right, Pat, quickly, give me 2 or 3 candidates and where you think this thing's headed.
Well, I think Galen Hall's out. Okay?
Which is a shame. I love Galen, by the way.
I know. Do too.
Love Galen.
It is amazing, though, to think about – going through this again. I thank God I don't have to deal with it in terms of being a newspaper guy. look, the names you're going to keep hearing are Billy Napier. I'm not sure about that, whether that's a good good hire or not. I think it's a good hire for somebody. I'm not sure it's a good hire for Florida. But I would think it was a terrible hire. You're going to hear Lane Kiffin's name. There's no evidence that Lane Kiffin can recruit. Show me where it is. I mean, he had that one. Everybody goes, oh, he had that one great class at Tennessee. Half of them never played for Tennessee because they were all risk guys. You know, I'll take this guy and hope he doesn't get arrested. Well, a lot of them did. So I don't know that he can recruit to the level Florida. And that's what Florida needs. They need to recruit well. The name Bobby Stoops keeps coming up. I just had Doug Johnson and Noah Brindise on my podcast, and they both, that's the first name they brought up. And I think there is at least a little interest. I don't know if it's a lot, but there's a little in him coming back. So, but look, I don't know. Whatever they hire, we'll deal with it and go from there. But, I mean, obviously things have had just become too toxic here. That's the bottom line.
Pat, how do you think they'll play Saturday against FSU?
I have no idea. I didn't know how they were going to play last week, and then all of a sudden the defense decided, we're going to play our asses off. You know, and the offense said, we're going to take this game off. So this goes back to the same old thing, Hayes, with Florida, is Mullen kept saying, he said it over and over again, you know, it's not one thing that's the problem. It's always, you know, it's a different thing every game. Well, that's the reason you're fired now. This game, it was they couldn't do anything when they got into Missouri territory. They were terrible. And their defense played great. Other games, defense doesn't even show up, doesn't even try. So I don't know what to expect from them. I would hope that they consider it a big deal, but there's a part of me that I don't even know that I want to watch this team play any more football games after Saturday. So, you know, it's whatever happens, happens.
Pat, I know that Greg Knox said that Anthony Richardson will at least get some playing time, but Dan Mullen also said that last week. How much of AR-15 do you think we'll see against the Noles?
I hate to be the guy who says I don't know, but I mean, how can you not play him in that game when your offense is going nowhere? Your offense is struggling. You know, your quarterback is struggling to get your running game is struggling. So, you know, apparently Anthony Richardson was hurt in some mysterious way, and this one wasn't a dance. It wasn't doing a backflip, and but he was dressed. You know, he was full dress, so I don't get why you wouldn't have put him in that game. I would think that, look, let's face it, he's coaching with nothing to lose. And that's the thing that disturbed me the most about that game Saturday night, and I think you guys will agree with me. There's two ways to look at it when you're coaching for your job. One is to let it all hang out. The other is to coach scared. I thought Dan Mullen coached scared Saturday night.
Really?
And I don't know. I don't think that obviously Greg Knox is going to coach scared because he's got nothing to lose. So I would think he would pull out all the fake plays, all the fake punts, and all the great special team plays they have held back all year because they haven't had any special team plays worth noting. And he may play Anthony Richardson a bunch in this game, so we'll see.
Pat Dooley checking in, talking Gators as always. Going to be an interesting week or two in this coaching search for sure. Pat, thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
We'll see you guys.
All right, Pat Dooley checking in. Dooley Noted is brought to you by Ackerman Urology. Don't delay your screening. Visit AckermanUrology.com today. All right, a couple things to report. First of all, Greg Knox is the head coach for this game. He's the guy that was paramount about making sure all the running backs get equal carries, and he said so in his presser today. We've got a great running back room, and they're even. Okay, that's the guy running the game. The guy calling the plays is Garrett McGee, the guy that did such a good job developing Emory Jones today. And the guy calling the defense is 31 years old and was also calling the defense for the Samford game. There's no chance they're going to beat Florida State. There's no chance they beat Florida State.
And amazingly, they're the favorite.
And they were a 10-point favorite last week.
Which was ridiculous.
Yeah, there's no
and
chance
this
they're
going to As yeah. ridiculous.
And if I told you Anthony Richardson gets the ball, he's not coming out unless he gets injured.
Yeah.
And Damian Pierce is also only getting spelled. Would you feel any differently
yes.
about the chances?
Yes, I would. But I have so much.
Not that we know what to expect.
But I have a lot of respect for what Mike Norvell's done with that Florida State team, and I would still pick them.
Yeah.
But they started with nothing and were embarrassed by Jacksonville State and fought their way to a really good season. based on where it started. We'll talk about that coming up later on, so I would still pick the Noles. But anyway, that's who's running the game this week, in case you want to know. The guy that decided Pierce shouldn't get the carries, plays called by the guy that developed Emory, and defensive plays called by a brand new coordinator. So anyway, for what it's worth, that's what's happening.
Florida State by 28.
Yeah, I will tell you again, I don't think the Stoops thing is dead, but I think it's on life support. I think Napier is their first choice. I think that's the guy they want. I also think LSU wants him, which means I think Florida's going to act very quickly if they want him. I do think Matt Campbell's in play for Florida because he's the guy everybody wants, and every AD is convinced one of them could be the one that pries him out of Ames, Iowa, or Iowa City, or whatever, wherever they are. They're one of the two. I mix them up. Is Ames Iowa State?
I think it's Ames.
I get them mixed up. I think it is. But now there's all over the internet, or all over Twitter, rather. I love the plane tracker. The plane tracker is the greatest thing.
It's phenomenal.
The plane I wish more coaches would get fired just so we'd have more plane tracking, because I think plane tracking is gold. But right now, there's a plane tracking apparently going from Gainesville. Have you seen this? Gainesville to Lafayette.
Love it.
Have you seen it? So plane track. Even if the guy's completely making it up, I love that it's on here. I have no idea how valid it is. But I love
I'm assuming
it.
It's not valid at all.
It's on Twitter, you know, right. So it must be kind of valid. Yeah. So, but anyway, I think Napier's their first choice. The reason they like him.
Feels like we just did this yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? The reason they like him, and Matt Hayes and I have had this talk, I don't think Lane Kiffin's even in it. I know, and we're going to open up the phone lines in a minute and see who the fans want, but I don't think Lane Kiffin's even in it. I think they're over quirky. They've had 7 years of quirky. Lane Kiffin's a really good coach, great offensive mind, good recruiter, but he's quirky. They've had 3 years of McElwain, 4 years of Mullen. That's 7 years of quirky. I think they want not quirky. I think they want culture. I think they want normal. I think Matt, and again, I'm stealing Matt's words. Matt used the word normal in his Saturday Down South story today, but I think they want normal. I think they want a real coach who's going to build an infrastructure of recruiting, who's going to build an infrastructure of coaches, who really is going to relate to the players, who really is going to connect with them like some of these guys do. I think they want Billy Donovan and Mike White, the football version. I know not everybody loves Mike White, but ADs love him because he's real and he's normal, and so was Billy. And see, here, let me tell you what happened with Spurrier, okay? Spurrier was so good that he was quirky, but he also was normal. He was quirky, but he built an infrastructure. He made sure defense was good. He made sure they were in shape. He made sure the strength program was good. He related to all the – he went to the other games. He went to the softball games and the baseball games and the basketball games, and he connected with Gator Nation. So even though he was quirky, he was normal. You with me on that? He was a Gator through and through. But even when he went to South Carolina, he did all those things. He connected the way a coach is supposed to connect. He cared about his players. His players really liked him. But that led us all to believe that quirky's good. McElwain was quirky. Mullen's quirky. Lane's quirky. So let's go get quirky because Spurrier was quirky and it worked. Well, Spurrier was also a really good coach and a really good guy to have on your campus and a really good representative of your – he was everything a coach wants, and he was quirky. And so I think – you agree? I think they're over quirky. I don't think Lane's even in. That's my guess that he's not even in the picture.
My guess is the search would have to go – sideways before it would get to Lane Kiffin. I still think that there is merit in Lane Kiffin, but this is what I always try and do. Put yourself in the position of the man who's putting his career in the hands of this coach, because that's what Scott Strickland's doing. He's not going to get to hire a third football coach. This is Scott Strickland's career on this decision. Are you going to put your career in Lane Kiffin's hands? I don't think he will. I think Lane Kiffin would be really exciting, but is somebody who has to sit there and make the decision knowing my career rests on it. I would be concerned that when he's back in the pressure of a big time job, it's one thing to be the cool guy at FAU, and I think even at Ole Miss a little bit, because Ole Miss is an underdog. I mean, that's just to put it kindly, Ole Miss is an underdog and will always be an underdog. Florida's not. Florida is win every game. You can lose occasionally, but championships are expected. Style points are expected. And I would be a little worried. I get that Lane Kiffin is showing some maturity, but if I'm Scott Strickland, am I putting my career in the hands of that when I don't know how he's going to react when he's back in the pressure cooker of a major elite college football job?
We'll take a break. Who do you want to be the next Gator coach? We're going to ask you to pick the next coach. That's what we're going to do with our phone caller, 641-1010. That's next day with us. All right, 641-1010 is the number. We'd like to hear your opinion. Who do you think Florida should hire as its football coach? Johnny is up first. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Frank.
Surely.
It's a head scratcher. I can't imagine a team like Florida going down so quickly. It looks like a correction in the stock market. Mm-hmm. But here's one for you. I think that what it's showing us that X's and O's are important, but keeping the team unified and keeping the guys focused is probably just as important as anything else.
Yep.
And something, and you may say this is crazy, but go with me for a second. We need a guy who can relate. We need a guy who's a player coach. Of course they're talking about, we'll forgive Urban, just bring him back. I think, okay, that's not going to happen. But I'm not so sure that there's another person that's on the Jaguars staff that might be suitable, and that's
Charlie Strong. Okay.
Yeah, and when he was at UCF, he had a offensive coordinator, but he pulled him in a little bit too late. The guy that just had won a national championship at Valdosta State, and now he's up in Western Carolina.
Yeah,
putting up some big numbers. Kerwin, I know that Kerwin has flirted with coming a couple of times.
Yep.
But I wouldn't mind seeing those guys back in Florida where they belong,
right,
and see what KB could do as offensive coordinator with Charlie as head coach.
Johnny, I like it. Johnny says Charlie Strong with Kerwin Bell calling the plays. Yeah, they tried it at USF. In fairness to Kerwin, there was nobody left there when he finally got to call the plays. That wasn't on Kerwin. I agree with Johnny on that. Alan, who do you want? Who do you want the coach to be?
Frank, I think the ship on Bob Stoops has sailed. I mean, it's old news. He's turned us down before.
Okay.
You know, the favorite period in my Gator, following the Gators since I was a kid, was the Spurrier period. And I think Lane Kiffin reminds me most of Steve Spurrier in a lot of ways. Watching him run down the sideline and throwing his clipboard in the air and the way he relates to those kids, and he's young enough. He's brilliant on offense, and if he brings in a good defensive coordinator, I think Lane Kiffin would create a lot of excitement myself. I really do.
No question about it. Alan, thanks for the call. I think that part's true. Hayes, we've talked about that. Lane would excite the masses.
Yes.
No, nobody would deny that Lane would excite the masses. Let's go to DJ. DJ, how you doing?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Good.
This is a long shot for me, but Kellen Moore in 5 years is going to be a great college coach. I'm telling you, Kellen Moore. Last year, he was in the running from some NFL and college, 33 years old, and he got the number one offense right now. You know Kellen Moore. He's a college guy, Boise State guy.
Yeah.
And I love Kellen Moore.
All right, DJ, appreciate the call. I think Kellen Moore is going to be a really good coach. I think he's going to be an NFL coach. What do you
correct
think?
Yes.
I think he's going to I see him winding up in the NFL.
And it's the Joe Brady case as well. Correct. You'd love to talk, maybe consider Joe Brady, Joe Brady's waiting on an NFL job.
Yeah, again, I think Napier and Matt Campbell are the two guys that they will pursue. I don't think the Stoops thing is dead yet. But I will tell you this, the more people I talk to, not everybody's in love with the Stoops idea. I am, but you said you weren't, right?
I like the Stoops idea if Stoops wants it, but to me,
wants it.
Yeah, I don't want to have to twist Bob Stoops' arm to come be the Florida coach. Florida needs burning passion, intensity, energy out of that whoever's going to be the head coach. And if Bob Stoops has that, 4 years of retirement, he's recharged, he's ready, he wants to go win another national title. I'm all for Bob Stoops. But if it's it might be fun to be the Florida coach, then I have no interest in Bob.
How about you?
Stoops. Well, there are two things that he never had to deal with, and that's the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness. And so I'm not saying that 61 is too old to learn those things, but he's never had to manage it, and those things are proving to be so important in today's football.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a different world than he coached in. You're right. Let's go to Sam. Sam, who do you like?
I would start off by calling Mario Cristobal at Oregon.
Okay.
and just gauging him, see how he, I mean, your seat would feel nice. That would be pretty tough. But I would be happy with Billy Napier, too.
Okay.
Where he built a staff, the way that, you know, he would attack recruiting, I think it would be a good hire.
But if you only have one of the two, would it be Cristobal? Who's your one guy?
Cristobal.
Okay, you got it. Thanks for the call. I don't think Cristobal would come to Florida and not go to Miami. I think Florida could pay more, but probably incrementally more, because I think Miami's going to try and load up the coffers for this job because they realize they haven't done that in the past and it's time to pay a guy. He played at Miami. He was played on national championship teams. He and Toretta, if Geno gets the AD job and he's truly in play for it, played together for 4 years, came in together. I think Mario's from Miami. I think if Mario comes back to the state, he may not leave, though. He's got a great job. But if he comes back to the state, I think he would wind up at Miami. Jermaine, who's your guy?
I just want to say, go Noles, man. This is so good to hear y'all talk about this.
Well, go Noles it is, Jermaine. Thank you for the call. Tom, who's your guy?
You know, I am interested in knowing this.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Go ahead, Tom.
I'm actually an FSU fan as well. I just think the Gators should take a serious look and maybe see if they could get Willie Taggart from FAU.
Well said.
Who would scare you, Tom? That's where I was going with it. If you're an FSU fan.
Tom's gone now. Sorry about that. I would
think. Cut him loose immediately.
I would think FSU fan, Georgia fan, Tennessee fan doesn't want Florida getting Kiffin.
That's what I would think.
I would think if you, let me put it this way. I'll flip the script. If Georgia or FSU lost their coach, I don't want them getting Kiffin.
I would not be scared of Napier.
Yeah, right, right.
Just because you just don't know.
Right, right. Napier's not a light up the press conference. Oh my God, you're going to run out of there because you saw him throw for 7,000 yards. Again, passing guys. There is a lot of belief that Kiffin is the next Spurrier. And I could be wrong, by the way, and he could wind up in the job. I'm just telling you, I don't sense that's where they're headed. I sense they're not headed for quirky guy that goes on social media and trolls other programs. I don't think that's where Florida is right now. I just, given where they've been the last two coaches, my guess is that's not where they are right now.
And what's your confidence level that even if successful, Lane Kiffin is at Florida for the next 10 years?
Well, you never know how mature he is. Yes.
We think he's matured, but I still wouldn't be surprised if he left.
Took another job.
And if he got an NFL head coaching
offer. And let's be honest, his dad was a legendary NFL assistant coach. He's already been an NFL head coach.
Right.
And I can tell you he's got a lot of friends in the NFL because I know some of them. So, that's a good point. Wherever Lane Kiffin goes next, it's not necessarily, to your point, Lauren, where he's going to go last.
Right. But don't get me wrong. If he ends up being the head coach,
I'd be very excited.
I'll be thrilled.
Let's
go
to Bobby. Bobby, how you doing?
Hey, Frank. Yeah, the last caller stole my thunder. I think Willie Taggart would be a great hire.
Thanks, Bobby. But, Appreciate Noel Nation weighing in on this segment, by the way. Go ahead.
Do y'all really, honestly, to a person, think that Florida State's going to go into the swamp, even with all that's going on, and beat Florida? Honestly.
Absolutely.
Honestly.
Bobby, for the record, I don't think I'm ever going to come on here and say something dishonestly. You know, so obviously it's honestly. I'm never going to come on and say something I don't believe. I believe Florida State's going to win the game.
How is Florida State not incredibly confident that they're winning
Saturday and
winning probably comfortably?
By the way, I think Florida State's better than Missouri and South Carolina. They both just beat them, Bobby. So yeah,
I don't think Florida State would go into South Carolina. I don't think Florida State would go into Missouri and win those games. Well, I don't think so. Oh.
Missouri beat Boston College earlier in the year, for what it's worth. They did.
Well, maybe not.
But they had to hang on, didn't they?
Yeah.
FSU almost blew that game. They should have probably almost lost that game.
Yeah, but they won.
I don't buy it. I'm not buying into the fact that Florida still has the better roster.
Yeah, Bobby, thank you. Yeah, I think that. I think they had a better roster than South. Look, they're being coached by an interim coach.
Yeah, I mean.
And with all due respect to Greg Knox, I don't mean this mean, but I was serious when I said earlier, Greg Knox is the reason – The three running backs are alternating. He said it again today.
And Florida State wants to go to a bowl game. Their players, their coaches are dying to go to a bowl game.
Right.
I think Florida's players and coaches are like, can we just end this?
Let's squeeze one or two more in. John, you're next. Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, thanks. Appreciate the call. I don't know if this name has come up, but what about Charlie Strong? Would that be a possibility?
You're the second one to mention Charlie today. So, Charlie, I don't think he's in play. I just don't. He hasn't been a head coach in a while. But you could do way worse than Charlie Strong. I would agree with that. But I don't sense that he's in play for this one, John. I just don't get the impression that he is. But we'll see. But we'll see. John, thanks for the call.
Again, with Charlie, he has the show cause.
Yeah.
So it's hard to hire a head coach, right, and then have him be suspended for the Utah game, which is what, you know, my understanding is what Charlie Strong mm-hmm. is looking at. So I don't think he's going to be in play for this job. Although obviously, yeah, Gator fans have a lot of affection for Charlie Strong.
Yeah, I'm trying to squeeze in one more caller here. Give you one more. This is Top Gun joins us now. Top Gun.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
How are you, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I hope y'all all have a great Thanksgiving. And if Brooks is sitting there, get a Christmas tree this year, for God's sakes.
Did you not have a Christmas tree?
I think we skipped last year.
Oh, okay. You tell her, Top Gun.
Top Gun's got a good memory.
Tom Gunn didn't play in that, okay?
Listen, on the coaching search, nobody mentioned the key guy. How about Mr. Gator himself? Frank Frangie.
Top Gun, thanks for the call. You know what? I'm going to write me down here, okay?
I'm returning for a sixth season, yeah. Damian Pierce said.
So here's where our poll ended. Two for Charlie Strong, one for Kiffin, one for Kellen Moore, one for Cristobal, one for me, okay? First of all.
Actually, we had a tree last year.
Yeah.
Never mind. I remember now. I broke a lot of ornaments putting it away.
But I think we should all vote. I'm going to second one for me, okay? So. So
and you'll probably take the job for what, $3.2 million?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well,
it's a pay cut for me.
Yeah, but
working here at 10:10.
Yeah, I'm going to take the job. And let me just tell you a few things. We're throwing it all over the lot. Okay, we're throwing on every down. Is Jeremy Crawshaw on scholarship? Do you think he's on scholarship?
I think he is.
Well, I just saved a scholarship. He can go back to Australia because we're not punting. We're not punting. Have I ever told you about one of my favorite Spurrier stories? Jim Goodwin was the recruiting coordinator in 1990-91. Great guy, came from Clemson. But he wasn't a coach, he was a recruiting coordinator. Back then, your recruiting coordinator wasn't a coach, and he oversaw recruiting. And in 1990, Florida had this really good team, but no punter. So Arden Chizeski, if you remember, actually punted. He was a place kicker. Do you remember this? But he actually had a punt some too, and he wasn't a very good punter. Do you remember? He was a place kicker, but he had a punt too, and he wasn't very good. He would punt 30-yarders, but he'd get it. He was a good athlete, so he'd get it off. So they needed a punter. Well, they heard this guy, Shane Edge, was the best punter in the country. He was in Lake City or Live Oak? Live Oak, maybe. He's one of those cities. Where's Shane Edge from? Lake City or Live Oak? Anyway.
I think Live Oak.
Hey, how do you not know this?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So anyway, Shane Edge was this great punter. You remember Shane Edge?
Oh, yeah.
This great punter.
He had a great run.
Right. The
Lake
great run.
City.
Okay, so he's the best punter in the country. And he wanted to go. He was going to come in early. So he was there. He was waiting. He just wanted to meet Spurrier. He had never met him. He met the recruiter. He was going to sign right there, be in there December, be in there January, go to spring practice. So Jim Goodman's got Shane Edge outside the hall waiting to talk to Spurrier. And Nancy, Spurrier's secretary, said he's on the phone as soon as he'll get off. So Goodman's nervous and nervous. He's got the best punter in the country. And Shane Edge is walking around. He's nervous, and Shane's nervous, and Shane's nervous, and Goodman, he's waiting, he's tapping his fingers, he's waiting. Nancy goes, Jimmy told me he'd let me know. He's waiting. Finally, Goodman can't stand anymore. He loses his mind, his face is red, he jars open the door, and Spurrier's in there putting. He's in there putting on his little putting green. And Goodman goes, "Coach, we got the best punter in the country standing in the hall. He wants to sign, he just wants to meet you." Spurrier doesn't even look up. Spurrier goes, Jimmy, we don't plan on punting. 100% true story. Comes in, signs him, and he's one of the best punters in school history. That's one of my favorite Spurrier stories. We'll take a break. All right, I'm going to get to some other things. We'll get back to Florida later on. Jaguar talk at 5 o'clock with John Osier. But when we come back, what a run by the Noles at the end of this season. What a run by Florida State. What a player this guy Jordan Travis is. We talked about it, but there's some other things going on there as well. That's next. Stay with us. A website called LSUOdyssey.com.
Sounds legit.
Lon Philip Sullivan.
He's got 2,000 plus followers. That's legit for sure.
He's got the he's the proprietor of LSUOdyssey.com. We already have the flight tracker, though.
Mm-hmm.
Lon says that University of Florida reps are in Lafayette talking to Billy Napier right now. So there's that.
Offer him a bunch of crawfish.
Yeah,
deal.
Yeah. By the way, he was on Jordy Holtberg's show. I guess Jordy's an old buddy of mine, so I probably can ask Jordy. I believe that. By the way, I believe number one between the tracker and this, and the fact that I was told by people that I trust that he's their number one guy, then I believe they are there now. Yeah, I mean, I believe it. You, there's no doubt in my mind they're there.
There's no doubt in my mind that whether they're there or there's no doubt in my mind they've made contact, and certainly wouldn't be surprised if I'd be surprised if they got if they went where the flight tracker caught them,
right?
Because it just seems like in this day and age, the athletic director, you know, drives to Orlando and flies to Atlanta and then flies into, you know, it seems like they try to hide it a little bit better than just saying, hey, we'll just fly the school plane from Gainesville to Lafayette. Right. But no, I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, again, it's going to be hard. A lot of times these parties will meet in like airport meeting rooms. Mm-hmm. Like they'll meet somewhere. Obviously with Napier coaching his team, it's probably got to be at Lafayette. But again, you know, there's a lot of I'm sure Scott Strickland wants to reach out to the Louisiana athletic director and all that. So maybe he's done that. I would commend Scott Strickland if he's already in front of Billy Napier. That would seem to be awfully quick, 24 hours after you've announced the firing.
Yeah.
But if you know that the other schools are potentially, especially LSU, very interested, you know you have to get on it.
I'll bet he's there. I'll bet all these reports are correct. I'll bet you all these reports are correct. So did you watch FSU? You guys watch FSU the other day? The back and forth game a little bit. I think they've built something there. The team is still just okay. The team is not as good as it will be in future years. Watch the last few weeks, watching them closely, like closely, watching every snap and watching how they play. That whole culture thing, I'm sold on that guy. They're not good enough yet, and they don't have good enough players yet for me to be convinced that he's going to be a great coach when they do. I mean, Adam Fuller, who's the defensive coordinator, had the ultimate gaffe on the Jacksonville State game when they let the long bomb, so they've made some mistakes. But I sense a good culture over there. The Kenny Dillingham comments when he got emotional last week, that was pretty good stuff. It was real. I sense, and I think, don't kid yourself. If you want to know one thing that expedited the whole thing in my mind with Dan Mullen and Scott Strickland is they're big culture guys in Gainesville, and I think they sensed it finally. FSU's got it built. Jimbo Fisher was a great coach. There wasn't a great culture over there. He was always mad about something. They had a circle the wagon mentality. He was mad at the administration. Remember that? He was mad. He was looking at this job and mad at the administration about this and mad at that. And his players were behind him, but it wasn't a university thing. It was us against the world. And I think they've built a good culture over there, Lauren. I think this Mike Norvell thing is going to be good for them. We'll see how good a coach he is and how good a recruiter he is, because right now you're not having to battle elite versus elite. But I think they got the right guy. I think you can feel it. I really believe that. You can feel it, I think, when you watch their games.
Yeah, well, certainly we'll see how the recruiting goes. That's really, these days, the test of how good of a coach you are in college. Look, I think the last 2 weeks, FSU earned really important victories. I would just be nervous, and this isn't necessarily a Florida comment against Florida, even though that's their last game this season, but assuming, though, they beat Florida, then they get to a bowl. But the defense would make me nervous because of the fact that the offense is getting out to these big leads, and then the defense ends up giving up a ton of points in the second half. And so that's one area I would like to see improvement.
They certainly have great strides they can still make, but considering this was 0-4, and now they've pulled it to 5-6, you've got the right culture if you're able to salvage that and you know, beat some pretty good teams in that run. The other thing, too, that is impressing me about what Florida State is doing, and I'm not ready. What if the Dan Mullen thing has taught me anything, I'm not ready to proclaim that Mike Norvell is going to be great or bad.
I agree with that.
Yeah, but I will say this in terms of the X's and O's. Jordan Travis threw 3 touchdowns to 3 different receivers. I think he's seeing the ball really well. He's distributing the ball really well. That's good coaching. That's good development. The other thing is Florida State's red zone offense right now is sensational. They were 4-4 against Boston College. They've now converted in the red zone 29 consecutive times. It's their best streak since converting 31 straight during the 16-17 seasons. So that tells me from an X's and O's standpoint, that Mike Norvell and his staff are pushing the right buttons when they're in the most crucial part of the field. So I think Florida State has a lot going for it right now. Obviously, he's doing better than his record would suggest he should be doing on the recruiting trail. And now he's got a weakened Florida, and you don't know how long it's going to take Florida to get back to, you know, a position of strength. So, yeah, I think if you're Florida State, you're incredibly excited. You're getting ready to go into the swamp and name your score, in my opinion, and then you can declare yourself state champs, which I do think resonates on the recruiting trail.
You better believe it does. And by the way, I'm not so sure they're going to name their score, but I'm convinced FSU is going to win that game because of all the dynamics we talked about. And when you win the Florida-Florida State game, you own that. That whole year matters. That you own that right for that whole year. See, Florida blew it. Not blew it, but Florida was in position now. FSU beat them 5 years in a row. Okay, Florida was in position to do sort of the same thing. It looked like they were going to win 4 or 5 in a row. They won 2, blew them out both times. Didn't get to play last year. Wasn't FSU's fault. FSU wanted to play. The ACC wanted to play those games. The SEC said, no, we're not going to play you. So didn't get to play last year. So this year, now after everything blew up, probably aren't going to win the game. So they went from what looked like a sure at least beat them 4 in a row to now 2 in a row, and that's about it. And you get to brag that whole year. Back to your point about their schedule now. When you're 5-2 in a power, when you go through a 5-2 stretch in a Power 5 conference, you're playing pretty well. I don't care if it's the Pac-12, the Big 12, the ACC, the Big 10, the SEC. If you go through a stretch, if Missouri went through a stretch where they're 5-2 in the league, you think they're playing pretty well. If Iowa State went through a stretch where they're 5-2 in the Big 12, you think they're playing pretty well. And if you're in one of the five major conferences and you go through a 5-2 stretch, even though one of them was a non-conference game, if you go through a 5-2 stretch, you're playing pretty well. They're 5-2 in the last 7 games. One of the two losses, their quarterback didn't play. That was NC State. The other loss was at Clemson, who's still kind of Clemson. Ask Wake Forest if Clemson is still Clemson.
And you know? Florida State easily could have won that game.
They right. So yeah, 30-20 doesn't tell. They get the oh by the way at the end of the game. So they're playing pretty well.
I know they complained a ton about penalties watching that game. Whether you agree or not, 13 penalties, 120 yards. ACC officials don't always call the right games.
You know, one I saw something today that even Mike Norvell said it. I think that they've in his 2 years there, they've had 6 games with 10 plus penalties. And 4 of those 6 were the same crew. Did you see that?
Oh, wow.
They've had in his years there, they've had 6 games where they were called for 10 penalties or more. 4 of those games were the exact same officiating crew. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're anti-FSU. It may mean they're a flag-happy crew. But it is interesting that 4 of the 6 games is the same officiating
crew. I don't know about all the other ones. This one, though, was 13 penalties for FSU, 5 penalties for BC.
Yeah, yeah.
So very lopsided.
That's frustrating.
And that was the same crew. It would be frustrating. It'd be very – and I watched it. FSU had some things to gripe about in that game. Now they had some go against them there. I was like, whoa, wait a minute now. So I get it. So they're at a good place. Having said all that, they need to win the game. They don't need to lose to broken Florida.
All the pressure's on them.
Whatever pressure's there is on them. It's not a game with a lot of pressure. Period. But you're now one game from a bowl. You're one win from a bowl. You're about to. It's your archest of arch rivals. They're broken now. They're clearly a broken team that can't be. They're 2-9 in their last 11 against Power 5 teams. You need to kind of go win that one. If you're FSU, it went from a house money game to now a setback if you lose it. So that's how the Florida FSU game I think changed for the Seminoles.
I think a big setback game. I mean, if you're Florida State, I mean, you're visualizing right now at 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, you're going around the swamp carrying that big Gator head, you know, and celebrating a huge victory over the Gators and signs with state champs that you're holding up and the 15 practices. It's not going to be a great bowl game, but hey, you get to go play in a bowl game. That's exciting, you know, particularly when you were winless in September. So if they don't win the game, I think it's a massive setback for Florida State and Mike Norvell, because then you're asking the same question that you were just hinting at. Then it's, well, if you can't win this game, then when are you going to beat? I mean, Florida is only good. Whatever you think of Florida now, and whether you think that they're going to maybe not get the search right, they're still going to be on much more stable ground this time next year. You got to, I mean, again, Florida had them on the ropes. Looks like they're going to let them off the ropes in terms of a long streak. But if you're Florida State, this is an absolute must win. It would be really, really, I think, heartbreaking if they lose in the Swamp Saturday.
Especially because you can run the football. And who beats Florida? Teams that can run the football.
Well, do you want to see Greg Knox being carried off on a player's shoulders?
Yeah. That's why.
Season ends?
Yeah, and again, I don't know Greg Knox, but I will be honest with you. He's the special teams coordinator, and they haven't been very good. And I get the hunch from people, what I'm told, he is the guy that pounded the pulpit for splitting the backs, splitting the carries. I think he's the reason Malik Davis started every game. I think that's his room, and he has started every game. And I don't doubt that Malik's the leader in that room. He's the head coach. Garrett McGee is going to call plays. From what I'm told, he's not a greatly respected play caller. And so he's the guy who's supposedly developing Emory Jones. And so I can't imagine. And by the way, I think Florida State is a very well-coached team. I think Norvell's a good coach. I think Kenny Dillingham's a good coach. Defensively, I think it's Adam Fuller. Am I saying that? I think that's who it is. Maybe not quite as good. But I think they're a well-coached football team. And I think and the trajectory is so different. You know, so different.
And
so
Florida State's defensive tackles are really playing well. I mean, yeah. Boston. Right. Well, sure, they've had the edge presence has been there all year, but
you're right
on short yardage. I mean, they've become really stout defending that. So if you're Florida in third and ones, I don't think you have a ton of confidence when you watch what Florida State's been doing recently to their opponents. So yeah, to me, it would be not a miracle, but it would shock me if Florida wins the game, and I think it would be devastating for FSU if they're not able to close Florida out.
We'll talk NFL and more. We continue. It's 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Frangie Show on a Big Chief Tire Monday. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline, Andrew Gibson. I'm Lauren Brooks. Well, gentlemen, we've talked a lot about the University of Florida and certainly Florida State as well. Let's get it to the NFL. Let's talk Jaguars in the next hour. There will be a lot of happiness when we do that.
The NFL, to me, I think the Chiefs are going to be tough to beat. I've gone Chiefs for going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they're making my Super Bowl pick look a lot better.
Going to the Super Bowl, all of a sudden lousy. Now, all of a sudden, I think they're playing as well as anybody in the league. And I'll watch the Bucs tonight, and I reserve the right to say the Bucs are playing better. But
Bucks
I mean,
have a fairly easy game, though.
But it is. But Packers, any of them. Right now, I think the Chiefs are playing as well as anybody in the league. You just feel – and look, the Colts are playing great. The Colts have found themselves, by the way. You know, but I think the Chiefs right now, but anybody I've seen play.
What stands out about the Chiefs is defensively, they've just been so horrible. And to do what they did to Dak Prescott yesterday was really impressive. To hold him to 216 yards and no touchdowns, two picks. So that's, you know, the knock on Kansas City has always been, will they be able to get enough stops? And then the offense got into a slump, but you had to figure they'd come out of that, and they have. They look like a much more of a balanced team. And again, it helps. They know they can do it. You know, they have the pedigree, they have the ring. So that makes them very dangerous as we get to the closing stretch. And they've gone from, you know, last place in that division to now they, you know, really seem to be in control of it. And it's hard to argue that Kansas City is playing great. Indianapolis is, to your point, to score 41 in Buffalo and have Jonathan Taylor basically announce himself in the MVP running.
Yeah.
They've got a ton of momentum. We talked about their tough start to the schedule, to the season, and I think they got off to an 0-3 start, but they've been great since. I think they've won 6 of 8. So, Indianapolis now looking very good.
And yet the Jaguars almost went up there and beat them. If Trevor holds on to the ball, might have. Isn't it a weird? It's a weird league, man. You know that? I mean, sports are great, period. But it's a weird league if you think about
that. Well, it's weird. Now the Patriots lead the AFC East.
Yeah.
I mean, right. How? I mean, what?
I know.
I mean, I thought the Bills were going to win that division by 4 games.
We all did.
Now they're in second place by half a game.
They looked like the best team. The Bills were the best team until suddenly they weren't. And then they were still pretty good until suddenly they weren't.
Well, and that was always the Patriots' old adage is we're not going to be the best team in September.
Right.
But we are going to be the best team in December, and that's what we want to be. That's when we start to think about the playoffs and all that stuff. And the Bills are going in the wrong direction.
I mean, how about Houston beating Tennessee?
Talk
about a weird – every week there's been just a very weird result.
And it's going to be very interesting to see what Tennessee is over a prolonged period of time without Derrick Henry. I've got to believe you know, I mean, the quarterbacks, Mahomes and Rodgers and Brady, are critical to their team. But, man, there's not many people more important to their team than Derrick Henry. You know that? And I'll include the quarterbacks in there. But there's really not. There's just not a lot of guys. He is really important to their team.
No question about it. We also talked, you know, on Friday we talked to Pete and about the Saints and you know, to lose to the Eagles in the fashion that they did, you know, and they didn't have Kamara, but now at 5-5, you know, New Orleans is interesting. We'll see what Tampa Bay does tonight, but if they win, they're two games behind Tampa, and you know, and kind of struggling to find footing now. In the wild card race, which is really becoming interesting in the NFC when you talk about that seventh spot, because right now there are just so many teams right at 5-5. You've got the Rams at 7-3 that would be the first wild card team, you know, and then just a litany of teams right around 500.
If you were doing a power poll right now, where would you go? Would you almost have to bank Arizona first because of their record? Because I don't know that I would.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, a power poll, it's if you're only going to go – those standings are the power poll if you're only going to go off the record. So, right. To me, if you're going to do a power poll, it allows you to have some, you know, perceptions beyond just what the record is. Yeah, I mean, I would not take – if we were doing a lottery on – or draft on, you know, pick the Super Bowl winner and I had the first pick, I would not take Arizona.
Which is interesting because Arizona has now won football games without Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, they're playing very well.
Not that the Seahawks are very good, but I mean, just don't ask the Jaguars about the Seahawks. But other than that, that's the thing. But I think overall, I'd probably still take the Bucks in the NFC.
If you had to pick right now who was going to play in the Super Bowl, didn't matter who you picked before, if you had to just say right now, Bucks and Chiefs?
I think that'd be hard to argue.
Wouldn't it be?
That was my pick just because I was like, I don't see anyone else knocking them off the top of the mountain.
Yeah, the Chiefs have really – correct, me too. The Chiefs have really found themselves. Yeah, and I've always thought the Titans were really good, but they are leaking oil. Again, it's going to be a hard go without him. Is he off? Is it the year, right? He can't come. Can he come back, Derrick Henry?
They said he can, but it seems unlikely that he'll be able to.
I saw a report that they're encouraged he can come back in January, which would be for the playoffs.
Okay, so but not until then. Yeah,
right.
And so, interesting stuff. So it's a weird.
And I don't know that they make the playoffs without him at this point. Yeah.
And here's the other thing. Can the Colts get going to where they get on a real run here? I mean, they're on a run already. I mean, can they be special? Can they be a special team?
They have something that I think really helps, which is they have offensive balance and they play good defense. So they are a team that does not have, I think, an overly glaring weakness. They don't have anything. Taylor has been sensational. And if this keeps up, then yes, absolutely. I mean, he's at over 1,100 yards on the ground with 13 touchdowns after what he did yesterday. And he's also caught a couple of scores. So, I mean, I think the Colts are well built. I don't see them as a Super Bowl contender. I see them as a team that maybe could win a game in the tournament you're not expecting. But I think they're good, but I don't think the Colts are great.
They
three out of their next four are tricky, though.
Yeah, they get the Bucks Sunday.
Bucks and then Texans, game. Not too difficult necessarily, and then Patriots and Cardinals. Yeah. The way they have all been playing, those are three out of four tough games. Who knows? The Texans all of a sudden have a little spice of life to them.
I'm looking for the – I mean,
thought the Jaguars were just going to easily beat the Texans.
We'll be calling a game so we can't watch it, but I'm interested to see what happens with Colts-Bucks. I mean, that game's in Indianapolis. That's an interesting game.
So let me get this straight. I can't watch Colts-Bucks because I have to watch – Jaguars Falcons.
That's correct. That's correct. Which do you think are the better of the two games? If you were sitting at home in Peoria, you're telling me you would take Bucks Colts over Jags Falcons?
That's one of those where they show you the map of the coverage and the Jaguars Falcons is going to be like the tiniest sliver.
We get Duval and Fulton, and that's it. That's all. We don't even get Cobb or Baker.
No.
We might not even get all of Duval.
You get Felipe Franks and Kyle Pitts. Yeah, that's right. That's what you get.
Oh, by the way, I meant to get this the other day. Now Jeff Driskel's a tight end.
Yeah, Felipe's a tight end, too. He threw a pass and a pick the other day.
Yeah, but Felipe's been a tight end. Felipe's been a tight end for like a month ago. Now Jeff Driskel's a tight end. Did you see this?
I'm
glad you brought up Felipe, Gib, because I forgot about that. Did you know that?
I did. It's peculiar.
Well, I don't know if you've heard that. I mean... I mean, Felipe is a tight end.
He's going to score a touchdown against the Jaguars. I'm calling it now.
Tebow went to camp as a tight end. Trey Burton went to Florida as a quarterback, as a tight end. Well, you see, you haven't heard all the news. Do you follow the news?
I don't.
You haven't heard all the news?
Not on Twitter.
Well, it's funny. They stayed in good shape. But they're bringing Werfel back as a tight end. Nobody saw that coming. I mean, he's still going to run Desire Street, from afar. But, oh, yeah, he's going to get tried with a bunch of teams as a tight end.
I'd be interested. Because
nobody can block and run probably like Danny Werfel. Yeah.
I'd be interested in knowing if Skylar Morningwick can give you something at tight end.
No question. He was misused.
I mean, he's like 6'1", 180.
He was misused his whole time there. And even though the fact that not only at Florida, but he's also not very good at Columbia, that was totally misused is what I think.
I think Dan Mullen should have converted Emory Jones to a tight end earlier this season, and things might have gone differently.
Oh, goodness. So, yeah, Jeff Driscoll's a tight end. And I told you the story before. Jeff Driscoll, we were playing a game in a Warriors game. He was playing, he was a really good baseball player. He was drafted and could have gone and played baseball. And he was incredibly fast. You remember the run against Vanderbilt?
Oh, yeah.
And then again, the big one against FSU. He hits a blooper. He hits a blooper right behind second base, kind of behind the second baseman, a little Bermuda Triangle out there. Center fielder comes in, right fielder comes in, second baseman goes out. The ball hits. When our guy picks it up, he's headed for third. I mean, what would look like to be maybe a bloop double. I mean, he could really. We said, wow, he could really run. So Jeff Driscoll, I'll bet he becomes maybe a pretty good tight end, not just a guy playing. Felipe Franks is the guy that's going to play tight end. I'll bet Jeff Driscoll might, because Jeff Driscoll was fast. Now, I mean, Felipe Franks was a good athlete, but he never struck me as someone that was straight ahead fast. Jeff Driscoll was fast.
Yeah, maybe the Texans will target a tight end, and then he'll have catches.
We'll see. Yeah. Good point. Well said. Take a break. Speaking of teams not targeting a tight end, let's get back to Jaguars football. John Osier joins us after this. Johnny O is coming up. Stay with us. Time to talk a little Jags football. Our man John Osier right around the corner. He'll be here momentarily. We'll get it back to last week's or yesterday's game. Reset it for you. I said at the top of the broadcast, I thought it was probably their worst performance. It was very surprising. Very surprising to me that after playing so well for so many games, it got away from them. Now, a lot of things, Lauren, we said this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, they got a lot of guys banged up. And the offense has to help some. If a team goes 20 plays, part of that's on you for not getting off the field. Part of it was some funky penalties that helped you not get off the field. But then your offense can't go 3-and-out. And then your offense can't go 1-and-out the next time. The Jags ran 4 plays when the 49ers had run 33 plays. Well, then your defense has, in the NFL, your defense has no chance then.
Yeah, and I guess I wasn't really as surprised as you because of the way that the 49ers manhandled the Rams, and the 49ers proved to me how physical and tough of a football team they are.
And that's who they are.
And they were coming here, and whatever they were doing to Rayshon Jenkins to get him to be all upset, it certainly worked. And they pushed them, they pushed the Jaguars around. And so, as Hayes likes to say, the 49ers won the street fight. But also, by the way, they're also more talented and have finesse. And Jimmy G doesn't have to be a perfect quarterback for them to be successful.
And he wasn't. I mean, he didn't play particularly well. He misses a receiver for a touchdown on the first drive. That should have been a touchdown. This game could have been worse. I mean,
oh, yeah. It felt it was 40-3. Yeah.
And again, just some really puzzling decisions. I'm really worried about Laviska Shenault. I mean, it just doesn't seem like you're getting really any impact from him. I'm really worried about just their personnel in general. I mean, Urban Meyer is talking today, and he's talking about Dan Arnold, I think, not getting the targets, but he switches it to, well, it always helps when you can just hand a guy the ball. He's like we can hand Laviska Shenault the ball, and I'm like, that's where they are as an offense. That's the first guy that comes to mind in terms of a guy that we can just immediately give we don't have to throw it to him. We can just hand him the ball. It's like he's not even in the same class as a player that you would bring that up, but that's all they have. Yeah. It's all they have.
Yeah, that is a concern, weapons on offense. All right, fire it up, Gibby.
Now it's time for the O Show with John Osher from Jaguars.com.
Oh.
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 Oh. Johnny O's in the house. What's up?
Oh, they're fired up, Frank.
Oh, how are the emails?
Boy, it's
good day with emails.
It's just
I like to call it 150 emails of fun.
Yeah. I'll bet.
Well, there's some good suggestions.
They have thoughts, Hayes. You know, there's some thoughts out there.
They're not afraid to make recommendations, are you telling me?
Yeah. You know, there's they have a lot of opinions about employment for people, which is expected, which so, yeah, that's where you're
at. Do they suggest some employed people should be unemployed people?
All sorts
of. That's part of it? Okay, I thought that.
Creativity runs rampant.
Did anyone suggest Frank should become the next Jaguars head coach? Because he was voted as the next Gators head coach.
Someone recommended me do it.
That didn't come up. Yeah. But if,
not in any of the 150 emails?
I think yet.
If
yet would be
properly,
the upper report.
It could probably be in play.
Okay, good.
John, I thought that was probably their poorest performance. I think Urban would say that too. Houston was bad, but it was the first one. And Trevor had never played in a pro game, and Urban had never coached a pro game. This was game 10. I was really surprised. Now, look, they had some injuries, but I was really surprised they got manhandled that much against the 49ers. Were you as surprised as I was that it went that way?
I was surprised they didn't recover. I mean, everything, obviously, the tone was set with the first drive. And it's like so often in the NFL, if they hadn't had the penalty, if they hadn't had the hold, and they get that sack and get off the field, I think Josh Allen has a point when he said yesterday it would have felt different because they weren't exactly getting rolled on that drive. They had a couple of third downs. But against that 49ers team, that's what they do. They get themselves in a third and manageable. They believe they can rely on it and get that done. They did the exact same thing to the Rams last week. Same sort of drive to open it. That's what they like to do early. But if you don't get them off the field during that, all of a sudden they've got a 7, 8, 9 play drive, and you feel like you've been punched in the gut. So I wrote, and somebody thought I was ridiculous, but they had some moments defensively, even as they were getting behind, where you felt like they were playing. They got the sack, and then even, you know, they had gotten off the field again on the third drive.
Right.
And then Jenkins had it. So it wasn't like they weren't showing. But then it sort of got away from them. And to me, that's the team they are right now. If they make mistakes, if they give opportunities away, it's not there to make up for it. If they play really, really well, they can have a chance to win three-point games. If they don't play well against a team that is playing well, they have a real chance to get rolled by 25.
The other thing, too, is we've talked about the lack of weapons. Now you lose Jamal Agnew for the season for a hip injury. It just it seems like
– speechless.
I am, because I don't know how they're going to make it through seven games. I mean, with what they have offensively. I'm not trying to turn Jamal Agnew into, you know, Marvin Harrison.
Right.
I mean, he's done some nice things, but – it is just, where is the offense going to come from? I mean, what are they supposed to do to score 24 points?
As Trevor noted yesterday, they're not going to cancel him. So
I know, unfortunately.
it was Hayes Carroll. Hayes Caroline said that, folks. I kind of went back and looked up Agnew's stats, and it's amazing that we are talking about him as such a key player, because the production, if you looked at it on paper from like even a fantasy standpoint, you wouldn't say wow. But you're exactly right. He's been so key in terms of giving them some sort of versatility, or some sort of threat. You know, again, I think the reality is, you can hear the way Hayes is talking, hear the way I'm talking. There aren't any answers, and I tried to talk about it on Drive Time this morning. I don't know where – I think this is rock bottom for the offense. When you score 43 points in four games and you haven't scored a touchdown trailing by less than 10 since before the bye. So they haven't scored a meaningful touchdown when you felt like things were even since mid-October. So I don't know where you go from here. I think if there were answers, they'd already been found. I hope John Brown can do it. I hope somebody can come in and do it. We haven't seen in a month that that's going to be reality.
It looks like James Robinson's maybe the heel got worse, or the knee injury added to the heel made him a step slower. Do you think they'll sit him at any point in time to try and get him to recover a little bit?
You know, it's hard to know. I mentioned that this morning, that it's – you would think that it's something they have to consider.
Mm-hmm.
I hate not knowing really how, not knowing him, not knowing his body. It's hard to know the answer to that question. I've got to think that that's what Urban meant today when he said he's going to talk to him, figure out if it's on the table. Urban mentioned how tough he is. It sounds to me like Urban wants to have a conversation and say, look, I get how tough you are. I get how much you want to play. Let's be realistic about what you can contribute. And if you can't, then we have to sit you for a week or two until you get it back. For his safety and for the team, again, you hate to take away the guy's fight like that, but that may be where they are.
John, Dan Arnold didn't get targeted in the game, and he's probably their best offensive player, which was odd. Urban Meyer said today he'll have to look into that or address it.
Yeah, he came back and said they bracket. I mean, obviously they look at tape too, the 49ers.
Yeah.
He's the only guy who's mattered in terms of playmaking down the field. You would think they would do something to take him away. So my guess is it was a lot more than that. I don't think they came in and said, we're not going to throw to Dan Arnold. But go ahead. I interrupted.
No. I'm glad you did because you answered the question. The second part of it was he also said that we may have to make changes. If things don't change, we have to make changes. He didn't elaborate on that today. But I'm assuming the only thing he could be talking about is benching his quarterback, which he's not going to do, I wouldn't think, or changing the play caller. So I assume – He said might have to make changes.
Yeah.
Were you assuming it's one of those?
Not really. I kind of took it more to mean at this point when you've scored 43 in four games and you can't get out of your own way, you've got to look at everything. I would be surprised if they changed coaches just because I don't know where you go from there. I don't know what you call different with what they got on the field.
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree with you. I'm not blaming Bevel either. I'm just saying the coach did say changes, and I'm trying to glean in my mind what he's talking about.
You know, I would think it's maybe he was in his mind. It's hard with Urban because it's hard to know what he means when he says things like that because sometimes you feel like he's thinking
as he goes
about other things and trying to figure it out, and he's trying to be honest. I'm glad he tries to be honest sometimes, but I think sometimes when he's thinking things through, doesn't always say things in the way that we might be thinking about them.
I would think
you, running back and receiver,
right,
start trying different combinations of things.
Gotcha.
I don't know what that means.
Here was Urban's comment earlier today.
And I don't want to get too specific because it's not my position to throw anybody under the bus, but we have to play better. If not, you have to make a change.
Yeah, he said, you're right. He said play. He didn't say coach better, didn't he? He said play better.
But again, I think when Urban's talking after games, and again, this is my first year covering him, I think he's really trying to figure out the answers. I've got to think he's flummoxed by what's going on, wants to find answers. Doesn't want to stay stagnant, but not sure where to go with it. I thought Trevor had sort of the same press conference after the game yesterday. Not really knowing where to go. Not sure if there are answers, but wanting not desperately to find them and to give people confidence that you can find.
And see, this is the difficulty that Urban Meyer is now facing. Because if this were to ever happen in any team that he's ever coached before, he could say, you know what? I'm going to pull that 4-star running back that we weren't really counting on this year, but we're putting him in. Or this 4-star, 5-star receiver that, he's probably a year away, but things aren't going, we're putting him in. You've got nothing. What are they going to do here?
They
gave Treadwell more reps. He played 33 snaps yesterday, which was 72% because they only ran 46 plays. But it's like, what are you going to do? You're going to give Tavon Austin more snaps on offense? Now you probably have to do that to some level with Agnew being out. To me, there is nothing. It's not like a card game where you can discard three and pull three from the deck and maybe change your fortunes. He has nothing, and it's not going to change until we are through with this miserable 7-game stretch coming up.
He's a happy guy, John. Have you ever noticed that?
He is.
He loves life. I think he gets more worked up now. I think it gets festered, over the years. Yeah. The Jaguars have gotten.
But at least his college team's playing well.
I think that's added to it. I do. Yeah.
He's had the Jaguars going 4-4 over the last 8 up until yesterday. So this game really did suck the life out of him.
Look, I think defensively they can still win games. Mm-hmm. They can win 13-10 games. I think they can beat Atlanta. I'm not going to pick them now, but I think they can beat Atlanta. I think they can beat the Jets. I think they can beat the Texans. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't know what the Colts are going to be playing for in week 17 or game 17. They may know their seed, or they may be out, and they may have nothing to play for, and the Jags might get an oh, by the way, win at the end of the year. So, I think they're still – I'm not suggesting they're going to lose out, but what I'm suggesting is offensively, right. I don't think they're scoring 27 in a game. I mean, that is all offense. I mean, they may get to that if, you know, the defense contributes a touchdown or they get something off the special teams, but that's the thing. Can they win? Yes, they can still win, but they're going to have to win like they beat Buffalo. I don't think that there's any chance that all of a sudden you're going to look up and this is going to be an offense. Forget 250 and 250. They'll be lucky to get 150 and 150.
Frank, you have a lot of sponsors.
Yeah.
I'm teased about your sponsors. Do you have a damp towel guy?
Well, I thought you were going to say, do I have a psychologist? Because we need to get one of those.
Just somebody with a damp towel.
Yeah, that's all you need. We'll take a break. What happens when the Jags move forward? What happens? Is Atlanta the team they can beat? One more segment with Johnny O after this.
So Shaq is in protocol. Cam is, I think, fine. I talked to him after the game briefly, and he should be good this week. Heisen landed awkward on his shoulder after making a heck of a play. I think there's positive news on him for the weekend. And
Andre.
Yeah, he tightened up his groin area, and I expect him to be ready.
So there's that.
We all felt like we got a kick in the groin watching that game yesterday. I'm just going to say it.
So there you go. Well, you know what?
That's how bad it was.
It was bad.
I don't like to see it.
The Falcons come in. Will they be better against the Falcons? I mean, the Falcons aren't very good.
Yeah, I think the Jaguars will play better. I think a lot, the 49ers are a tough team to recover against if you make mistakes and get down early, because then they've got you exactly how they want to play. They're the most physical team the Jaguars are probably going to play all year. So in that sense, it was a bad matchup to play that poorly in that way against. They're not as easy, or not easy, but you're less able to come back like you were against the Colts. And it's hard to get down every week by 17 points and expect to do that in the NFL. They should play better. But I'm kind of with Hayes. I don't see a scenario where they are in anything except a close game to have a chance to win. I cannot see them with this offense pulling away and getting up on a team. And over time, that hurts the defense, because defenses obviously play better if they're not holding their breath on every series, knowing that it's a pressurized series.
I think, too, when you look at Atlanta, like, as hard as it is to stomach what we witnessed yesterday and then be in a position of saying, I think I have some confidence they might be able to win Sunday. When you do look at Atlanta, they have scored 13 or fewer points in four of their games this season. Well, two of those games, or their latest two, they scored 3 points in a 40-point loss to the Cowboys, and then they got shut out Thursday night against New England. They've had extra rest. We saw a team that had little rest. It didn't affect them. So hopefully the Falcons having extra rest won't be such an advantage for them over the Jaguars. But this is an offense that isn't playing well. And the Jaguar defense, I think, is doing some good things. I think they even did things, yesterday, that if the offense can just give them any help, mm-hmm. but they don't. I wouldn't be surprised if you look up, Sunday at 4 o'clock and the Jaguars have won a 13-12 kind of game.
People sort of lumped these two games together and saw sub-500 records and said, well, they can go get both of them. The 49ers, to me, didn't feel like a game where they were playing a team that you can go get. They have a veteran quarterback. They're not unstable, a quarterback, and they had just played very well and they felt like they're back in it. Atlanta feels more like what I think a lot of people thought the 49ers are, which is a team that feels like the season's getting away from them, and that there will be some disorganization that you see in non-functioning teams down the end of the season. Frankly, that's what the Jaguars are right now, so you expect a close game. I don't expect this team to blow anybody out.
There were more drops yesterday. How overall did the offensive line play? Because it felt like to me, and I didn't watch film or anything, but it felt like to me that Trevor didn't have much time back there.
Didn't. It seemed like he got more pressure than usual. At the same token, I hate to keep apologizing for the offensive line, but when there's nothing downfield, Urban or Trevor after the game said they played more man. Well, they play more man because they know they're not going to get beat over the top, so they blitz more. They're crowding the line of scrimmage. You've got Bosa, who knows they're not going to do anything except try to throw the rest of the game once you're down 17. I think they did have more pressure on Trevor. I don't know how many offensive lines can withstand the circumstances they're playing. When you're down 17-0 every game, are you ever going to get anything except a pass rush?
Chenault, Marvin Jones, Treadwell, that's their starting three now?
Are you asking me or are you threatening?
I'm asking. Well, take it however you want.
I mean, I think it is. I don't know.
I mean, it could be Tavon Austin instead of Treadwell.
I say it tongue-in-cheek. This is a group that I think they had 52 yards receiving was Marvin Jones's number yesterday. That's the most of any receiver on the team since the bye.
Oh.
So it's not a group that is Urban said it best. Separation isn't a strength.
And there's no, and like you said, Hayes, earlier, you can't go get a guy. You know, you're not trading. Let's trade for their fourth guy who's not getting to play. Trade deadline, that's gone. That you weren't going to do it anyway because you need every draft pick you got. This is it. This is your team moving forward. And I get it. Where are you on the whole Lockett Forest story? Trevor's frustrated. I don't buy any of that. I think Trevor is frustrated because he's a rookie and it's hard for rookies. I think
this
Trevor's
is the kind of situation you hear a lot of things. Urban addressed it yesterday and it was interesting. He didn't deny that he's hard on coaches. So I think sometimes things that happen get interpreted one way or the other, and somebody tells a reporter and, he's hard on these coaches. Well, maybe it's just having a conversation with the coaches. When things get to be a mess, and right now things are a mess offensively, I think things get said and interpreted and written that wouldn't be written that way if things weren't a mess. And I'm not trying to talk around it.
No, I get it.
I don't doubt that somebody interpreted something and told Lockett Forest something. Is it extreme? Is it a case where Trevor's confused and can't read defense? I don't buy that, and I don't necessarily buy that there's problems for Trevor Lawrence. I don't know enough about staff relationships to know what's going on that front.
I'm going to give you guys something positive.
Oh, hey, nobody's more positive than
getting
you.
Back to
you're
the,
nothing if not positive.
To the Jaguars offensive line. They probably will play well Sunday, because when you look at Atlanta and what they've been able to generate in terms of a pass rush, they only have 14 sacks as a team, led by Dante Fowler's 2.5.
Darn right.
So I think you would like the Jaguar offensive line and pass protection in this matchup. To your point, though, it's just, will somebody get open?
Yeah.
And for Trevor to see them. But well, you would think he's going to have
with
time.
The line that, so I've just seen it over and over again. When you are trailing big early and you're in the NFL, it doesn't matter what you're playing across them. You're going to have a tough time not allowing pressure. The other team knows you have to throw every time you touch the ball.
Yeah, that's kind of the situation, right?
I know Urban said he's not sure yet who the punt returner is with Agnew out. Who do you think it will be?
You would think Tavon Austin. I guess I haven't thought it through enough. Claybrooks can do it a little bit.
One of those two, probably.
Yeah, I mean,
Tavon just dropped one, so yeah.
Regardless, it's again, this is always the mark of a team that's struggling when you're most concerned about losing your punt returner, or kick returner, but you've lost the guy who Jamal Agnew had the three longest plays of the year.
Right. Yeah,
offense, defense, special teams, whatever.
That was a tough loss. All right, so as you look, we got 7 games left here. There's not much you can change on offense. Defense has actually played pretty well. By the way, I thought the defense, look, everybody was bad yesterday, and the defense had some chances to get off the field, and they messed that up. That's their fault. But I still think the defense is okay. To your point earlier, Hayes. But I will tell you,
they were getting good pressure early.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they were.
That's a hard team to pressure.
So the defense will be okay. But again, you don't want to be a forecaster of doom. But I'm like you guys. I'm not sure what else there is they could do on offense other than just hope they do it better. I will say this. I said it before and I'll say it again. And Trevor started 6 of 8 yesterday after starting 3 of 10 a week before. I would build in short throws. I would build in enough where he's got some confidence. You're not going anywhere this year anyway. All that matters is developing your quarterback, and developing his confidence is part of that. So wouldn't you – I mean, I would hitch and a lot of short throws.
Yeah, it felt like they were trying to do that early yesterday.
It did. I agree with that.
I kind of liked some of the stuff to Agnew. Short, you know, everybody always writes one of the common things, why don't they throw the ball long? Well, when you're getting pressure because things are compressed, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you sit back there and try to throw it long and wait, then all of a sudden you're under more pressure.
Correct.
So it can keep going. Yeah, I would try to do that. The problem is when the other team doesn't respect your speed deep, they're playing on that short pass. So it becomes more difficult. I don't know the answer, Frank.
All right, Johnny. Hey, well, here's the answer. Get back to your emails.
All right.
Because I'm guessing, how many emails do you think we've had since Johnny's been here? 50?
At least.
50? Happy emails?
Oh, yeah. Of course, Frank.
I think you should change your title to Forecaster of Doom.
Yeah, that's Forecaster of Doom. John, it's a tough go for him. I will say this, 9 games or 10 games in, when we started, at first I had very unfair expectations. I thought they were going to be a 7 or 8 win team because I got caught up in Trevor and Urban. The reality of the fact that they were 1-15 a year ago hit me pretty early on, actually in the preseason. I would not be surprised. I would not have been surprised once that happened if they wound up being a 4 or 5 win team, which would be okay. Yesterday's the first time I felt like, wow, where's this thing headed? That's the first time I've really felt that way.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is you felt like that a little after Seattle.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And this and really is a team where there's going to be some games where they get hit in the mouth.
Right.
To me, the hope is you rebounded from Seattle and played 2 of your best games. I don't think for a minute that this defense is going to quit. There's nothing quit about this team. So if things go okay early in games and if they can somehow get something on offense, I think the heart's there to, as Hayes said, win 2 or 3 close games the rest of the way. I don't think that is off the table. Beating another good team, the way they're playing right now offensively, something's got to change for that to happen.
Johnny O., you see him on Jaguars.com. Thanks, John. We appreciate it.
Guys.
One segment to go. Have it for you after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, the Spurrier take on the Gators. Caught fresh by Safe Harbor Seafood Restaurant and Market.
And I had absolutely no idea it was happening on Sunday afternoon yesterday.
Okay.
Buddy Martin called me, said they're having a press conference, and it looks like Dan Mullen's going to be fired and let go. And that's the first I'd heard of it.
Okay.
Some people think I have input on the coaches. My title is ambassador. It's not associate athletic director for football. So I have no input. If they want to ask me about this guy or that guy, I'll say I like him, maybe him or maybe him. But when Dan Mullen was hired 4 years ago, Scott Strickland said, I'm going to hire Dan Mullen. I said, I think he is the best guy we can hire. So that was my input into that. And whoever he chooses to hire this time around, I hope I'll be able to say I think he's the best guy we can hire.
Yeah.
But I have no input in that and should not have it.
The comments of Steve Spurrier. Real quick question, Frank. Do you think Steve should be allowed to coach the game against FSU?
Yes, and all of them next year and the ones after that. Let the ball coach. Let's run a little Emory and Henry. How about the Mills route? You good with that? How about a quarter route and a fade?
I think he should have input.
How about the lead draw?
Because we're clearly not running Emory and Anthony.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have had him coach this game.
No? Okay.
But I will tell you that Paul Pasqualoni is one of the advisors.
Right.
And both the McElwain and Mullen staffs chose not to lean on Spurrier's offensive acumen. That was their choice, and they're both offensive guys. I probably would. If I had the ball coach on my campus, willing to give me off, willing to come down there and sit in my meetings, I would jump at that so fast.
Me too.
And so, and the two previous coaches have chosen, and that's their choice, but they've both chosen not to do that. I would do it.
Well, as far as the next head coach goes, Hayes has something to say about that, but I want to let everybody know, if you or someone you know needs tires, nominate them now at BigChiefTire.com. Now through December 10th, one lucky winner will be selected on December 17th. And obviously, as we know, Big Chief Tire cares so much about this community, and this is an excellent thing that they are doing. So remember, go to BigChiefTire.com to register to win. All right, Hayes, take it away when it comes to the next.
All rise.
Now, Hayes Carline's closing argument.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye.
Presented by the personal injury law firm of Harrell & Harrell.
Order.
The watchword for this Gators football coaching search is going to be alignment. Get used to hearing it over the next week or two. Alignment is going to be the watchword of this search. What does alignment mean? Well, we learned what alignment means from Scott Strickland when he met with reporters yesterday. And really his only opportunity to sort of sell the program, sell the job to his pool of candidates. He was asked a question about, you know, what makes Florida great. And the word that Scott Strickland used was alignment. This university is aligned from president to athletic director to boosters and what they want to do. And there isn't the interference that you get at some schools because there's too many cooks in the kitchen, not everybody pulling in the same direction. Why that was so key is when it comes to Billy Napier, the Athletic's Brody Miller wrote a fantastic feature on him about 10 days ago. Brody Miller covers LSU for the Athletic, and obviously Billy Napier is a focal point of LSU's coaching search. There were a couple of lines in that story that really popped to me. Again, the story was written 10 days ago. It talks about how Billy Napier turned down overtures from Auburn, South Carolina, a couple other schools, but the thing that stood out to me was this line. One job Napier turned down because of issues with alignment from the president to the athletic director to the boosters. It also goes on to say that one of the reasons that Napier has stayed at Louisiana longer than many expected is because of the, again, alignment from president at Louisiana to the athletic director to Napier. I think Scott Strickland was sending a direct message to Billy Napier yesterday on what his pitch is going to be and why Florida is the job that Billy Napier should take, not LSU, which has had trouble with alignment in the past, just like Auburn. I think Scott Strickland tipped his hand yesterday, and I think it's why you're seeing reports that Florida may already have a presence in Lafayette talking to Billy Napier. I think Billy Napier is absolutely the top target for the University of Florida.
Yeah, and I get the sense that I don't think anybody debates he's high on the list. You hear, I'm getting texts from this person and that buddy and this person. Nobody really knows. Everybody's involved in it as best they can. I'll say what I said again. The alignment thing, by the way, that's a big Saban word. And the whole alignment thing, Hayes kind of told me that story yesterday. Hayes caught it. I didn't catch it. You caught Hayes and I were talking on the phone last night, and he had found out, or he had read the story about Napier using the word alignment in the story, and then the story he just told just now that you heard Strickland use it. I didn't catch that, so Hayes got it. So I'm having that conversation with somebody that I trust in the business too, and someone said, not surprising. That's a Saban word. We all have to be aligned together. What that really means, to your point, which you just said, when you said LSU had problems with alignment, I mean, the boosters try to push people around and tell them what to do. When Joe Oliva was the AD at LSU, it was a disaster. Nobody knew who was running the show. Ask FSU people. That was one of the biggest. Was Seminole boosters making the decision? Was the AD making the decision? And it was a disaster. That's one of the first things that Saban did, is got that in line when he went to Alabama. Well, Florida does not have that problem. The boosters, I can tell you, the boosters don't get in the way. If it's a bad hire, it's not because somebody forced one on Scott. It's because Scott got it wrong, and he would tell you that. And so that's a great point. So where's it going to land, Brooks? Who's the next coach at the University of Florida?
Well,
is it Billy Napier?
Or the jet is in Lafayette. It sure seems like.
Yeah, now people say that maybe not exactly correct. Believe it or not.
Shocking.
Is he the next coach?
That's what it feels like, based off of the jobs that he's turned down in the past, based off of how good of a job he's done at Louisiana, and the fact that he's young. I think that is where Scott Strickland wants to go.
No matter how many Gator people don't like Mike White, who team plays tonight, by the way. No matter how many Gator people don't like Mike White, that's the model they want. Young coach, got a lot of opportunities, handpicked Florida, has the right culture. They're going to win. They're going to win way more than they lose. They're going to be in the postseason every year. And they really like Mike White at Florida. No matter how many fans are Mike White haters, there's no Mike White haters in that administration. They think they've got the right guy, like it or not. And hopefully this year he'll prove that. Well, Napier is very much Mike White. Like him, Mike White also came from a Louisiana school. Like him, he also turned down a bunch of jobs. Mike White turned down Tennessee. He turned down two. Do you remember that? Before he finally said yes to Florida. So there's a lot of similarities between what Mike White has become and what they want Billy Napier to be. So I think it'll be him. I do think Matt Campbell's in play. I think that one is legit. And, again, I saw something today where LSU is down to Aranda, Napier, and Campbell, and that any of them will take the job if offered. That was a story I read, so we'll see whether or not that's true.
When we talk to Greg McGarrity tomorrow, it's going to be fascinating to find out what this process is like. Yeah. You have fired your coach. Now you don't know exactly which guy. I mean, Greg certainly knew Kirby Smart was his guy if he was going to take the job. But if he had said no, you know, how the rest of that process all works.
Yeah, I agree with you. The whole thing's fascinating. The way the whole thing works is, to me, is fascinating the way they all go about it. So it's going to be very interesting to see who winds up being the coach.
Speaking of the basketball team, Cal rolls out tonight two juniors, two seniors, and a redshirt senior. If this was Florida's team last year, I feel like Cal would roll Florida. But because of the experience now that the Gators have, I feel good about it.
Here's how I'm convinced Florida's going to win. I desperately tried to get a bet with my buddy Roxy Bernstein today. Wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Really?
My buddy Roxy is he's as big a Cal fan. He's a Cal grad, and he's as big a Cal fan as I am. For people that don't know, he's an ESPN basketball broadcaster and does some football for Pac-12 Network. Works with Bill Walton a lot. Wouldn't take the bet. I couldn't get Roxy to take the bet.
Florida is a 13.5 point favorite.
He said we are terrible. They all that whole group gives me a hard time because 1 year Florida, it might have been the 4-8 year. 1 year was I doing touchdown radio games during the 4-8 year?
Yes.
Okay. Whatever year
that was, 2012.
It was 12, right? Okay. So anyway. So I said, what about the Gators? I said, we're just not very good. Well, they got the biggest kick out of that. So now that the group text, somebody always says somebody's not, well, we're just not very good. Well, Roxy said they're beyond not very good, so he wouldn't take the bet. So I think Florida wins. By the way, FSU's in town. Do you see that where they're playing in that basketball tournament? It's being held at UNF, which is kind of cool. The FSU basketball team. Don't sleep on them. They're going to be pretty good, too, no matter what happens with Florida. But yeah, Florida's a special group. I'll be locked in tonight. You there yet? You at basketball yet?
Yeah, I'm intrigued. What channel, Dick? Can I watch it, or is it on stream?
Hang on.
On SEC.
Yes, I'm intrigued. What channel?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I have no idea when the game is or what channel it's on.
It's at 8:30. It's on FS1.
Then I will probably watch.
And it was 2013, not 2012. But you still were doing Touchdown Radio in 2013.
That's right. It was 2013.
We haven't even gotten to Thanksgiving. It's hard for me to
Is the official?
You're gonna be watching NFL.
Yeah, is the official?
Right. I forgot about that. I'm actually not watching Gators. I'm watching Bucks Giants.
I know what happens on this show.
As the official basketball beat reporter for the All Things Gator podcast, Hicken has given me he's assigned me the basketball beat job because he has no interest in it.
He
does have it, but I'm the basketball beat reporter. Okay. So as the basketball beat reporter, we welcome you to Gator Basketball. Anything you need to know, let us know.
Great.
We'd love to have you with us.
You're always a wealth of information.
So tonight at 8:35, when Tom Brady's going against the Giants, you will not be watching any Gator basketball.
I mean, I'll flip when it's—
You'll stop by when it's convenient.
Yeah, but okay. I'm not going to lock. No, okay. I've got something riding on tonight's game.
Do you have a problem? Do you have a problem with that?
No,
I have a big problem.
But I know him.
I know him, and I don't like him. Okay? It's badly affecting the friendship. I'm gonna
tell last week when we were at Dome, Frank said, yeah, the three of us are Gator basketball diehards.
Yeah, you kind of looked at me up. Yeah.
I was Brooks looked at me like. There's nothing wrong with not being a Gator basketball diehard, but don't necessarily make Hayes come off as something that he's not. He'll tell you.
Don't defend him.
He'll start watching basketball in January. Gator basketball junior, that's fine.
Yeah. And if they make the tournament, you'll be locked in.
When they get into conference play, I'm locked in. Yeah, but I'm not going to sit. And they're playing Cal tonight, which is a good program. But
what if they play Ohio State?
I'm not going to watch every tip when it's Florida Morgan State.
What about Ohio State if it's Wednesday? If Ohio State beats Seton Hall,
that game tips up at 6 p.m. tonight.
Yeah. I would watch that. Okay, I mean, I like Gator basketball.
Okay, well, thank you.
I just don't build my life around it in November and December. Now, once it gets into SEC play,
then I build my life around.
Yeah. You forget, by the way, that I'm the guy that watches Buck 62. Okay. Right. Okay. You forget I'm a little sick that way. Okay. I'm not like normal people. You know a lot of normal people, and then there's me. So there's that.
By the way, I have an honest admission. I wasn't sure if I should even reveal this on the show or not, but I downloaded the Hallmark Channel app. Just because of how highly you talk about the Hallmark Christmas movies. Oh, so if phenomenal. I'm bored over the next few weeks, I'll be watching Hallmark.
Oh, they're phenomenal. Christmas. My wife loves we watch the Hallmark Christmas movies. Let me see what happens.
They're okay. So bad.
No, you have no idea.
Why did I download it?
No, you have no idea. Here, let me know what's going to happen, Carline, okay? They're going to meet. Mm-hmm. It's the guy and the one. One of them is going to have their husband or wife died. Mm-hmm. They're going to be raising their kid. They're going to be out of work. But the other one's going to help them rebuild the fort, rebuild the business, and then they're going to get together and they're going to date. But you know what's going to happen after that? Conflict. Mm. They're going to look like they're going to break up. And you know what's going to happen at the end? You ready for this? Going to wind up together. I'm just telling
with
you.
With snow falling.
With snow falling. I'm just telling you. That's what you get with a Hallmark movie.
It's a formula that just cannot be defeated.
Let's say hello to Rick Ballew.
Now, the 2-Minute Drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit TireOutlet.com/careers, equal opportunity employer.
Rick, if you were the Gators, who would you hire? Who do you think they should hire?
You know, I love Lane Kiffin. I hope he doesn't end up there. I saw what you guys said a little bit earlier. You know, that is a little bit of the roll of the dice. I'd reach high here. I'd go for someone who's proven. James Franklin makes a lot of sense. He's been at two, you know, decent programs. Certainly, you know, I don't know if his attitude and his way around it would work. I think Bill O'Brien would be a phenomenal coach for Florida. Don't know if today, you know, how today's, you know, collegiate football player, they need to be coddled. You can't yell at them. You can't discipline them because they'll call mommy and say, I want to transfer.
Which is why Bill O'Brien might not
exactly.
be a good hire.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason why. But I still think he'd be a great coach. Yeah, what do you think?
I said this earlier in the program. I think Mike Norvell in mm-hmm. FSU has put some pressure on Florida. Because I think they got the culture right over there. We'll see if they're good coaches and good recruiters.
Yeah, we'll see.
But I get the sense they got the culture right over there. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've weeded out a lot of selfish players. Correct. Now they need to get better players.
And we'll see if that can happen.
Right,
I think who I would get, I would do everything I could to talk Bob Stoops into doing it. I've heard that in play, but it's on the fringe. He's not sure. Hayes makes a great point. You want someone who's dying to have the job, not someone who thinks they may want the job. I think Napier's going to be the guy. Everything you hear is that
he's only 42.
Yeah, everything you hear is that he's the guy that they're focusing in on. So I'm okay with that. Again, I would rather, Bob Stoops is my guy. I really liked the PJ Fleck thing, but it doesn't look like he's on anybody's radar these days. I guess he's gimmicky, but I think I think Florida recruits well because it's Florida. If he was running around, I think he'd get a lot of players. I don't know if he's a good coach.
Yeah,
it looks
Bob
like he's
Stoops,
not even in play.
Bob Stoops been around here. I remember a year ago during COVID, we were out at. That golf course out in St. Augustine. I can't think of it, the private one. And Spurrier was playing golf out there with Bob Stoops. So he loves it around here. But, man, he just seems to me like he's getting fat and happy on that Fox pregame show. I stopped watching the ESPN pregame show probably 4 or 5 years ago. The one on Fox is really good. It is really entertaining. It is good. And he just seems to be having so much fun with no stress.
And that's
when you go back into the pressure cooker.
And everybody says that, Bob. Yeah. Everyone says he's having a good time. So we'll see. What's coming up tonight?
Oh, man. None of it's going to be good, unfortunately. Is it me or does this feel like, out of all the years that we've spent covering football, the worst year of in-game coaching decisions and the worst year of officials making in-game decisions. It just seems like every game I watch, it doesn't matter who it is, there are problems with the officials, and the coaches leave you scratching your head.
Well, the official, the FSU game the other day, they got jobbed. If you're talking about that game specifically.
I'm talking about them all.
Yeah, but
how about the Alabama game?
Yeah, but the Florida State-BC game, I watched that whole game from start to finish. That's one game that if I'm a Noel fan of that one, I'm not very happy with the officials.
You had the spot in the end zone. All these games run together for me. I'm trying to remember which one that was.
But, I think two things.
Night.
I think we –
It was the Miami game.
Yeah.
It was the Miami-Va Tech game.
I think there's more over-officiating. than there's been in a long time. So,
all right, Rick, we got all that coming.
Thanks, buddy. Rick Beluga's into the night as soon as we get out of here. That's our program. Thanks for being part of it. Rick is up next tomorrow. Don't forget, 2 to 4. We'll see you at 2 o'clock on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. For Hayes, Lauren, and Gibby, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.